Hello, everyone, and welcome to the latest episode of Sug Talks. I'm Craig Dale, your host, and together with our special guests, we'll take a deep dive into the topics, challenges, and opportunities facing SAP users today. Please make sure you hit that subscribe button so you never miss another episode. I'm delighted today to be joined by one of our regular podcast guests, Simon Nichols, CEO and founder at Thrive. So welcome back, Simon.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, always a pleasure. And today we're going to be discussing depression and how you can support those around you, both in your personal and professional life, as well as where you can seek help if you're suffering from depression yourself. And just before we get into that, just thought I'd ask you, what fictional world or place would you like to visit?
Oh, God.
And while you're pondering that, I've gone Neverland. The never-aging Peter Pan, I think I'd like to be in that. Perhaps learning how to fly as well and, you know, going up against Captain Hook and his crew. Yeah, Neverland for me. Simon?
I realise that this whole podcast has started with me just basically interrupting you at every sort of level of the way, because before you even finished saying, I said Hogwarts, because at heart, I am a Gryffindor. And I totally believe that, you know, we live in a sheltered world as muggles. And if only I was chosen as a young 11-year-old to go to Hogwarts School of Witchcraft and Wizardry. By the way, other wizarding worlds are available. But yes, I think that's where I'd really like to be. I like to believe in magic.
Very good. Well, you know, if you're only halfway there, grow that beard out quite a bit more. Hagrid, you know, get a big furry coat and away you go.
I've been called worse in my time, Craig. I was really hoping you were going to say, I was hoping you weren't going to say, if you grow your beard out a bit more, you look a little bit more like Dumbledore, because that would have really upset me.
No, I wouldn't go there. Not when we're just about to head into a topic of depression anyway. So,
can I just quickly touch on the fact that we glossed over the fact that you said Neverland. And the reason is because you, when I first met you, you have not aged a day. You are the eternal SAP Peter Pan.
Oh, fantastic. Thank you. We might as well just end the conversation now, because that just made me very happy. And we'll just keep repeating that message out there for everybody else. Thank you, Si.
My pleasure.
So, just moving on to our topic of the day, and to start things off, Simon, I just wondered if you could give us an idea of how many of us actually struggle with depression at some point in our lives.
It's a really interesting question, because I can give you the statistical answer, but we know that statistics are only based on evidence, and that evidence is sometimes skewed. If you take the world population, then the estimates are around about 5%. So 5% of us at any one time in our lives could be struggling, as you said, or living with, is another way of putting it, is living with depression. And that figure could be as high as 12%. So if you're thinking, you know, from a percentage of individuals that you may know, you know, we're pretty much looking at 5 to 12 out of every 100. Or, you know, one in every 10, potentially. So, and what's really interesting around those figures is that it is global. Depression is an equal opportunities employer. It doesn't discriminate, although, again, the diagnosis is heavily weighted towards women. So there's up to more than 50% of women, 50% higher women diagnosed than men. And we think that's more around the fact that men are pretty rubbish at talking, and potentially will just man up or try to get through their depression without actually sort of acknowledging it in the first place. But yeah, I mean, it's a situation where a lot of people go through every single year.
Yeah, thanks. And just kind of on what you were talking about there, especially from the male side and opening up, I suppose, on this. And, you know, there's still I think a lot of stigma related to depression. I think it has improved, but I certainly think it's still there, and in particular, talking about it, as you mentioned. So have things actually improved in recent years, or is there still a long way to go?
They actually have. And when we talk about the figures being slightly skewed, obviously the World Health Organization is pretty much the final authority and the Office of National Statistics. So when we get that 6%, that doesn't actually tally with the UK. And the UK roughly at the end of 2022 had 11 million people who were diagnosed with depression. And 11 million is around about the 15% mark. Now, what's interesting about that particular figure is at the end of 2019, that figure was 5.2 million. So what we saw during that wonderful, I don't know what we call it now, the thing that we don't like to talk about too much.
Our COVID era.
The COVID era, yeah. COVID era. Is that we saw almost a doubling of individuals being diagnosed with depression. This is really important to use the word diagnosed. They've gone to see a medical professional. They've gone to see a GP, which seems to imply that stigma of admitting that something's wrong is starting to reduce. Now, from a male perspective, what's even better is that during that percentage increase of nearly 5 million people, or just over 5 million people, 60% of those were male. It's the first time ever that more male diagnosis of depression was recorded than female. So I think a combination of the struggles that a lot of people went through during COVID, a lot of internal, I guess, am I really happy? And then potentially the advent of this. For those of you that are listening, we do also see each other when we're recording these. And you can now get a GP appointment over the internet. So I think for a lot of people, that face-to-face embarrassment has now gone, because actually you don't even need to have your camera on when you're talking to a GP. So I think the barriers are coming down slowly. And I think what's amazing for us as males is that we now are able to talk about it a bit more openly than we ever were.
Thank you. And just to help us understand, perhaps, if you can, around supporting someone living with depression, as you say. I thought we could maybe talk through a scenario so listeners can better imagine the steps to take to support someone. You know, with that in mind, imagine you're an employee at an organisation whose colleague seems to be under the weather, shall we say, but you don't actually know whether or not they're suffering from depression. As a first step, what should people be looking out for if someone's demeanour seems to have changed?
I think the first thing you have to think about is the change, because there is no right or wrong answer. When you think about the demeanour being changed, if you think about someone with depression, what they might be doing is masking it completely. So what you are seeing is someone being happier than they normally are, someone being more excitable, someone being more engaging, because a lot of people think and associate depression, and you've seen the stylized pictures, it's someone sitting at a desk, their head in their hands, and this look of abject despair. Now, of course, that is a very clear sign. However, it could also be a very clear sign your football team's just lost. You know, we've got to be very cognizant that a very small dip of that under the weather, as you said, could be a blip. It's I'm not having a great day. When you think about persistent under the weather, what you might be able to try and do is you're trying to push through it. You're trying to feel that everything is okay. You're lying to yourself almost. And so then it does manifest itself slightly differently. We have to remember that when we think about depression, this is as a direct result of our fight and flight. So this is a lot of chemicals that we've been absorbing into our bloodstream over a period of time, such as adrenaline. And adrenaline, as you know, sort of causes us to be energetic and move around. But you think about that adrenaline just coursing through our bloodstream over time could actually exhaust us as well. So while we might appear to have a lot of energy, at the same time, we may appear to, to be sort of a breaking point as well. And different days affect people with depression as well. Yeah, it's not just you're always going to feel this low, persistent mood. That's how you realize, I think, that you're in a particular area. But as you know, Craig, from being a mental health first aider, when you, there's difference between being sad and being depressed. And it's that fine line. So if you do notice an employee acting differently, have they changed from their normal routine? That's the point at which we should just think about maybe asking them, is everything okay? And when they say fine, which they will do, we ask them again, are you sure everything's okay? And when they say fine for the second time, as we will do, we then switch on the rule of GP. The GP always asks the same question three times. It's typically on the third time they get the answer that they suspect is lying under there. You go, you've been acting a bit differently recently. Are you sure everything's okay? I tell you what, why don't we go and grab a coffee? So when you sort of start putting all of those three elements into place, you notice the change in someone, whether it's more energetic, less energetic, having the wherewithal to go and approach them and then just ask them if they're okay. This is not asking if they've got depression. This is just asking them if they're okay.
Thank you. And yeah, I kind of understand that from, asking that question three times. There's also, I suppose, just kind of switching slightly as well, the way fine is spoken and said, as a married man, I know that perfectly, that if I ask my wife, I think something's wrong, and she says, I'm fine, she is not fine. There is something I've done that's caused her not to be fine. But anyway, moving back to you touched on, mental health first aid there, and, just moving on to, I suppose, my next question, whether you test me or not, I'm hoping not. But assuming a colleague, we've spoken to them, we can see that there is something wrong. There is that, as you said, that persistent look of, or you get a feeling that they're not quite right. Things have changed. How would you suggest the employee should support the colleague, even though, you've asked if they're fine, you've asked three times, perhaps not going there, and I'll bring it out. I think I've remembered it. Algae,
spot on.
Please don't test
yeah,
me.
Yeah, it's... No, it's fine. Algae, for anybody else who's listening, who is also a mental health first aider, is the first A. We're not going to give it all away, Craig. But the first A is the approach. And I think that's the most important thing in whenever we're doing these types of things, is how do we approach this person? This person has may not want to talk to you. They may have been, living with these feelings for a very long time. They may not be in a position that they want to share anything. So the approach is very important, and that's the first A in algae. And it's also used for assessing. So when we find a way to talk to this person, and it could be in a safe space for them, it could be in a coffee shop, it could be somewhere that they feel comfortable, and they start talking in a particular way, and it could be that they do open up and they do tell themselves that it's okay, this person is genuinely interested, then that individual will feel in a position to be able to talk to you. But at any point, we are talking about people's thoughts and feelings. Any point, they could start to burst into tears. They could start talking or using words and sentences which may be triggering to you as well. So I think any employee has to be very aware that they need to feel safe themselves. And at any point, this situation they're talking about, especially if depression's involved, could result in that individual being using words and language that maybe they're not comfortable with hearing. So you need to be very comfortable yourself that you're going to be able to do it. And that's why we talk about that approach and assess is not only looking after yourself when you're in that situation, but how you're going to work with that person if they do start to become agitated or upset.
Yeah, and I like, obviously, what the point that you mentioned there about in a space environment, if you like, that's comfortable to the person. Because, you know, we maybe feel worrying that what if by bringing this up we're going to make the person feel bad, therefore they're not going to want to discuss it with us. And so you mentioned their location, you mentioned assessing, and I suppose it's bringing that empathy into it and, you know, not being judgmental. But what other advice would you give people to deal with a situation like that?
The key thing that quite a lot of people, when they start first talking about how they're feeling, is they want to be listened to. They don't want to be asked questions. They don't want to be suggested to. They don't want to be offered solutions. They just want someone to listen. So if you go in with the mindset that you're going to shut up, okay, that's the real key thing. You're going to just listen to what they say. You're not going to pass comment. You're not going to tell them that your Uncle Derek had depression, so you know exactly how they're feeling. You're not going to try and put yourselves in their shoes. How can you? You're not that person. You haven't lived their life. But more importantly, you've got to ensure that they have that capacity to share, which is we talk about it, active listening. So you're not just sitting there as a dumb mute nodding. You're actually prompting them. You're actually asking them to continue. You're using silence. Now, were we to put silence in this podcast, Chris would clearly cut it out. But the power of silence is incredible. And there were some statistics I was reading about the other day, which is fascinating for podcast guests. As a human, as a species, we need up to a minute to completely finalize a thought or process against a question that we've been asked. Up to a minute. The average time, and this is not podcast hosts, the average time that a teacher or a facilitator or an educator gives us to answer that question is 11 seconds. Even if we put 3 seconds in a podcast, it would be edited out because people don't like to hear silence. Whereas when you're talking to someone and they're bearing their innermost feelings, what they want is occasional silences. Silences work both ways. They give you the power to actually think about what that person's saying and to maybe formulate your next approach. And it also gives that person time to reflect and get themselves together. So I know we're not going to use too many silences in today's podcast, but give the person time to respond. Give the person time to open up and don't be afraid of silences.
Thank you.
We know our community, but we don't know yours yet. Why not share the benefits of your UKI Sub membership with those who don't know about us? The UKI Sub referral scheme rewards you for helping to grow and develop our community. You can check out the link in the description to find out more about how you can get involved. Terms and conditions apply. We hope you enjoy the rest of the podcast.
And just back to that scenario that we're talking about here, and you know, I'm now putting myself in the shoes of the person who is concerned about a colleague. If they're a bit worried about approaching them directly, or they've asked and they've got, yeah, I'm fine, a number of times, should they be comfortable in raising their worries and concern with either management or HR if they think one of their colleagues is kind of living with depression or is displaying the signs, perhaps, of somebody that, you know, just doesn't seem their normal self and down.
Yeah, I think if you are in an organisation that's fortunate to have mental health first aiders or anybody who's mental health first aid trained or, you know, has a background of empathy, I think that person may be the right person to approach first of all. There's a level of hesitancy going towards a manager or going towards HR, especially because there's the perception that that will be recorded, etc. Depression doesn't have to be on any HR records unless you as the individual want it to be. I think if your only option is to discuss it with someone else, then yes, either your direct line manager, if they're the same or otherwise. And if that is the case, I would then next go to probably a HR business partner. Quite a lot of HR business partners do have mental health training, or they are the gateway into the employee assistance program. So if you do need a route, I would suggest, yeah, try and talk to a mental health first aider, then talk to a manager, preferably your manager, and then obviously then move on to an individual who... one of the HR business partners.
Thank you. And so staying on that piece, because this is obviously the other side of what we're talking about here, and you touched on it, and that is the organisation and the way the organisation is structured and set up. And you mentioned there whether you're lucky enough to have mental health first aiders within the business. And as you mentioned earlier, I took the training with you and Thrive, and along with Helen. We are mental health first aiders, and it was just right at the beginning of COVID, actually. We're back in late February or early March 2020, just right before COVID kind of hit us into lockdown, which I do have to say, you know, really has helped with my strategies to remain positive and try and help those around me, just as the world went absolutely COVID crazy, if you like, throughout, you know. And we have training booked with you next week, as you will be aware, to take our whole team through a mental health awareness course, because I do think it's very important. So what do you think leaders within a business should be doing to ensuring they're creating an environment where people can feel comfortable opening up about their experiences?
I think it's really important to start with a why, start with a strategy, because it's very easy to throw training. Now, I know in your case, we'd already spoken at great length before you and Helen came on the training, and we'd done various things in the background to ensure that the training was going to be useful. If you look at the five pillars of well-being, of which that sort of, you know, mental health support really sort of fits under, you need to know why. And I know we often hear this, don't we? Sort of, what's the why of a situation or why of a scenario? But we really do need to know why you're doing it in the first place. What is your end goal? Now, we do a lot of strategy work with organizations, and that's the first thing we go into. We very rarely talk about training, because training is just an end, a medium to help support. But ultimately, what are you trying to do? Are you trying to reduce absenteeism? Are you trying to reduce presenteeism? Are you trying to reduce staff turnover? Are you trying to get your morale score up? Are you trying to get your customer satisfaction score up? What's the return on investment? Because although mental health and people support shouldn't be money orientated, unfortunately, it still comes into that. And we know from the wonderful Deloitte report, the employer's mental health in 2022, for every £1 that you spend on well-being support, you get a £5.30 return on investment. £5.30, five times ROI, which should really resonate with a lot of leaders on this call. But you've got to have a reason for doing it. If that reason is to help in your bottom line, that's absolutely fine, because ultimately you're going to be putting things in place, you're going to be putting a strategy in place that's going to really help all of your employees. The worst case is, even if you're thinking about it financially, is people are going to benefit. People are going to feel better. People are going to want to work more productively, more positively in your organization. So I think you really need to start with the why. Yes, training is important, but it's only as important as that wider strategy and how you can support everyone 24 hours a day.
Thanks. And so I suppose not skirting over the fact, if you like, on the why, but do you feel it's important for organizations to have mental health first aiders in the business so they can support people?
100%. 100%. It's one of the most proactive ways an organization can help support its front end. We have worked with customers who didn't want a strategy. They wanted some training. And within about 6 months, about four of them staff members who'd been on the training had left. There was no support put in place. And a few of them didn't want to be mental health first aiders anymore. So you can throw a lot of money at training, but without the support in place, who supports the supporters? And quite often, the leadership don't appreciate that they need support as well. So they sort of, oh yes, we must have a head of department, or we must have this. Who in the leadership team is a mental health first aider? Because to be a good leader, you need to be able to walk the walk and talk the talk. So if that direction is coming from the top and that training is part of a wider strategy, then it will work. If you just throw training at a problem, we all know that that isn't going to work, especially e-learning. I mean, I love e-learning for various points, but have it as part of an overall strategy. Have it as a reminder, have it as a refresh, have it as a recap. Don't try and just put everyone through e-learning and think that you've done right, because all you've done is tick a box.
So from that perspective, look at it from a strategic perspective first. You know, what is the why? Why are we doing this as a business? What is the outcome? What are the ends we're looking for here? And then go forward with the best approach. And is that something that you would work with organizations on yourself and how they can maximize that return?
Yeah, we typically go in and we do a state of the nation. We do a 10,000 foot view, using all these lovely idioms for management consultancy. But effectively what we do is we look at where you are now and where you want to get to. Very simply, we look at what you've got in place, policies, the procedures, where you fit in other organizations of your size. And yes, of course, training fits part of that. But mostly we try and get a feeling or a sentiment of your organization. How are the leaders feeling about this? How do the staff feel about it? What surveys have you done? What surveys are you going to do? What a lot of organizations fail to do is they have some staff surveys, some wonderful staff surveys, and they've got years of these staff surveys. And we go, well, what analysis have you run on them? Well, we know people are happier than they were 6 years ago. But why are they happier? Why? No one really does much with the data. We talk about data being king. We're both in the SAP world, and data is the most valuable commodity. But when it comes to people data, we very often struggle. So we look across the board. How much does it cost to recruit? How much does it cost to lose someone? How much does it cost reputation-wise for disenfranchised employees telling the media about how poorly you supported their mental health? So there's often quite a lot of soft costs that don't even get covered in that 5-to-1, because we often don't understand how much it costs to replace an individual who's left due to mental ill health. Now, what we have to remember is in 2023, so a full year after COVID era, 61% of people cited the reason they were leaving their job was because of their mental health being unsupported in that organization. 61%.
Wow.
So when we think about those individuals who might be sitting there, as you said, struggling, but maybe just living with their depression because of everything else that's going on in their lives and what they might be thinking about you as an organization. And if what you're doing is chucking an awareness training at them or putting free fruit on the side, yes, that'll help to a point, but it's not going to help the root cause of why that individual is feeling that way. that individual will probably need more support. The Mental Health First Aiders makes it proactive, but then having a really decent employee assistance program at the back end that helps make it reactive as well. So we can support the people to slip through the net.
Thank you. And just coming back to that personal point of view, we've spoken about, obviously, a person living with depression, a colleague who perhaps notices that they're struggling, and also what strategies organisations can put in place to help support and create an environment where employees feel comfortable sharing their experiences. Do you have any tips for managers who were approached by a colleague to inform them that they're struggling with depression?
Yeah, it's managers are probably the most important and impactful on your life. Okay, if you think about anywhere that you've ever in work, your the way your manager treats you is sometimes the most pivotal things that can happen to you. And it's how they treat you in the good times as well as the bad times. A bad manager will be remembered forever, but for the wrong reasons. Good manager will absolutely help you excel and push you forward, and you'll remember them as a friend. And I think what most managers can do a little bit better, even though we know you're tired, we know you're going through things as well, is just treat that individual with kindness. There's a lot of talk and speculation about playing the mental health card. But as you said at the beginning, Craig, there is still stigma and discrimination. Even if you go, I'm really stressed, I need some time off of work, I'm depressed, we think you're making that up just to get some time off. No one lies about being stressed. No one lies about that level of stress burnout, because we're all stressed. But actually treating that person with empathy and kindness, getting that person support as quickly as possible, could be the difference between that person being off work for 6 months versus that person being off work for 6 days. Now, what would you prefer to have? Would you prefer to have someone you don't support and they need 6 months off work, or someone you do support? So we have to act with kindness, and we have to believe everyone. Unfortunately, there will still be people that will be pulling the mental health card. But you think, actually, if someone's pulling the mental health card, are they all right? Are they really okay? Because actually, there's something much fundamentally underlying what they're talking about, and it could be that they're lying to themselves about how they feel.
Thank you. And that's an interesting point you made right at the beginning as well, because I think the statistics show that the majority of people actually leave the manager rather than leave the company when they do leave the organisation. But so what if, an employee's approached me, we've had a chat about it, I've listened, but they don't want anyone to take any further action, if you like, or don't want to do anything themselves. Are there any steps or organised that the manager or the organisation can take if they're just informing us of an issue but don't want to go any further?
Yeah, there's a very simple term. We are here for you. And it's a term that not a lot of people necessarily sort of think there's much meaning in. But, and we probably see it all the time. So give me a shout if you need any help. If that's delivered genuinely and you don't want support or help now, but you might in the future, we are here for you. Anytime you need to talk to us, we are here for you. It's, you know, the open door policy, but it's got to be delivered with meaning. It's got to be, you know, the organization has to believe that. Yes, you don't need support right now, and I can't make you go and see a GP. I can't make you go and dial up the employee assistance program. But as soon as you do, I'm here for you. And you know what? I'm going to check in with you next week, if that's okay. I'll just give you a very quick ring. If you still don't need my help and support, that's absolutely fine. But I'm just going to do that every week because I care about you and I want you to feel better in yourself so that you can either continue living the life as the way that you wanted to, or we can help get you support.
Thank you. And just now changing my shoes once again, to be the person suffering or living with depression, do you have any advice you can share with that person on where to seek help? If they're uncomfortable, perhaps raising it in the workplace with the manager, etc., or with a colleague, where else can they go to seek help?
There is a multitude of organisations, support organisations that obviously we can signpost people to. There is a wealth of information on the NHS about living with and supporting depression. Think about the people that love and care about you the most. They're the ones that are really going to be able to help you. And most of us have got that friend or that family member that maybe we're not that close to, but has always said to us, if you need any help, give me a shout. If you need anything, just reach out. It's sometimes easier to talk to a stranger than it is an actual real life person that you know, or it's easier to talk to someone that is on the periphery of your friend group or your peer group. I've always said this, and whilst my phone only has 24 hours, if anybody ever does need to reach out, if anyone just needs to send me an anonymous text message or WhatsApp, I've done this 3 or 4 times now. I don't actually know the person's name. They've just reached out for some help at a particular time, and I've just listened, and I've just been there to talk to them. You will have someone in your group, in your peer network, that will listen to you. And it's sometimes being listened to, even if you think your reasons for your depression are frivolous, they won't be. They'll be impactful and they'll be hurting you. So just being able to share that knowledge, the knowledge that someone else is in this with you, is often enough for that person to maybe go forward and seek extra help. But you have to make yourself available as that individual, as that friend. And it could be just, you know, reaching out to people every now and then with a WhatsApp or a text message. I'm always here if you want to talk. I'm always here if you want to have a chat.
Cheers. Thanks, Simon. And as we come towards the end of our discussion, are there any other thoughts you'd like to share with our listeners?
This might sound like a blatant plug, but I promise you it isn't. I was very lucky enough to do a TED Talk last January, a year ago now, and it's called Big Boys Do Cry. And it was my journey through depression. And what I've realized now, having run many courses and spoken to many people with depression, is that no one depression is the same. No one feeling is the same. The medical profession has actually done away with the terms mild, moderate, and severe, because why is my severe depression, why is that different to your mild depression? Who's the judge of that level of depression? So what I have been told is that the TEDx talk that I did has actually been shared to other people, and it's actually made them want to talk about it, want to open up. You don't often see a big bearded Hagrid like figure on a stage talking about, you know, crying in the middle of Pets at Home. And use those types of resources. There's quite a lot of TEDx talks that talks about people being on a journey through depression, and the key thing is we've got through depression. It never goes away. It's not like, you know, it's like a bit like an ex-smoker. You may never smoke again in your life. You've experienced it. You know about it. You understand it. So if you do have a friend or a colleague who may have been through that journey, reach out to them. Signpost the videos. Give them the support that you feel that they might need.
Simon, thank you. Thank you once more for your time, for your insights, and for sharing that with us today. And thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed the conversation and, more importantly, found it valuable. And don't forget to check out the show notes for the link to Thrive. And don't forget, if you ever do want to talk, we are here from you, whether it's anybody within our community at all. reach out, Simon or myself or anybody within the UK ISOC community. We are here for you. And lastly, don't forget to subscribe so you never miss any future episodes. So until the next time, stay safe, stay well, and stay positive.